The Russian military invasion of Ukraine continues to evolve in our daily news headlines, shifting from a highly targeted short-term intervention into a brutal war of attrition. And as the fighting has shifted, the allegations of war crimes have escalated dramatically while the Russians inch forward into Ukraine. Joining us to provide an updated overview of the conflict, we are joined by one of the world's leading defence and strategic policy experts, Curtin University's Associate Professor Alexei Moraviev. Good morning, Alexei.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. Can you please begin by giving us an update on the strategic situation in Ukraine as it stands this morning?
Well, the situation evolves, obviously, as we almost a month into the fighting. We don't really see the lowering of the tempo of operations. There was a lot of discussion that prior to the war that it's going to be a very short and swift conflict with Russia achieving quick victory over Ukraine in no time. Then when the war dragged on and in the first week or towards the end of the first week, questions were raised whether Russia has effectively lost the war and whether Ukraine has won the war, because I think everyone was really taken by surprise by the level of resistance and courage that Ukrainian military have shown on the battlefield. Then, as the war dragged on, questions were raised whether this war will eventually become a war of attrition and whether, in fact, Russia will have sufficient resources, capacity, or will to fight this protracted campaign, also with an expectation that another type of war, which was launched almost simultaneously with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and this time it was an economic war that the West has unleashed against Russia, would somehow slow down Russia's actions or perhaps even reverse them in some instances, because people in Russia would start feeling pressure from the sanctions. The oligarchs may revolt against Russia's President Vladimir Putin. As a result, Moscow's behavior may somehow be altered. And now we're a month into this bloody war, which I would also like to highlight. It's the single largest conflict since the end of hostilities in Europe in 1945. I'm talking about the European theater of war, obviously. We had bloody wars since then fought elsewhere. But it doesn't seem that the action is slowing down. It doesn't seem that Russia is changing its behavior. It doesn't seem that the level of Ukrainian resistance is weakening. So we're now entering this almost like everyday bloody horror show when we learning more about developments along the battle lines and around multiple fronts of this war. And, you know, there is this, obviously, war anxiety that is building up in terms of where this conflict will end, whether it will end anytime soon, or whether this thing will drag on for years, whether a political resolution can be found, or whether the two sides will fight until they will gain more ground on the battlefield in order to translate it in some sort of political dividends during negotiations that seems to be continue to take place while bloody fighting is occurring throughout Ukraine.
I wanted to get a little bit of contextual information from you around this conflict. One thing that we've seen, especially from the Russian side, talking about, Ukraine being filled with Nazis, and certainly some photos of some Ukrainian militia with, fascist and Nazi insignia and things. How significant has that been a factor in this conflict, or at least sort of in the preceding tension around the outbreak of this conflict?
Look, I mean, it obviously played a factor and continues to play a factor, particularly with respect to Russian propaganda. I mean, if you would listen, and, you know, unfortunately, we all been, you know, deprived. There's been obviously a suspension of Russian media channels transmitting their version of events onto the West, it's certainly been problematic for analysts to get the full picture of that if you don't have access to classified information. Certainly listening to what the Russian state officials are using as a narrative inside Russia, this is something that they use a lot, exploit a lot in terms of justifying their actions in Ukraine, justifying the war in Ukraine. Effectively, they're saying this is the second liberation of Ukraine from the Nazis. This is a continuation of what the Russians traditionally describe their great patriotic war, that part of the Second World War in which they fought against the Nazis. And obviously, this is something that clearly triggered was one of the contributing factors that triggered the internal conflict inside Ukraine between pro-Russian separatists in the Donbas region. It certainly is something that was used very heavily during Russia's annexation of Crimea, where it was bluntly stated, do you want to be with Russia or do you want to become part of the neo-Nazi regime? So the Nazi fact, even though obviously it's not the dominant discourse across Ukraine, and there are elements in Ukraine that are clearly extreme right-wing, and certainly they have no problem in showcasing or what their admiration and their affiliation with Nazi ideology and their admiration for the Third Reich and elements and insignia that are traditionally associated with the Third Reich, something that obviously doesn't resonate really well with Western liberal society. But again, we shouldn't be thinking of this as a sort of a state ideology or a dominant ideology, etc. But the fact that the Ukrainian government didn't do much in order to suppress that ideology, even though under current President Volodymyr Zelensky some efforts were made to kind of keep it at bay, it's only something that became used a lot by the Russians as a form of justifying why Ukraine is so dangerous and is so threatening from the Russian psyche and the Russian perspective. And certainly it's been exploited a lot in terms of furthering Russian propaganda about Ukraine, but also even now when Russians occupy parts of the Ukrainian territory. And we need to recognize this is not small gain that the Russians have achieved. You know, the Russians actually gained a territory which roughly the size of the United Kingdom, and that happened within a period of less than a month. So whilst we somehow expected that the Russians may swallow Ukraine in very short period of time, and Ukraine by far the largest European country if we exclude Russia from that calculus, so it's not something really tiny that can, you know, you can cross in a car in a couple of hours. It's a massive territory. So for the Russians to gain control over about 30% of the Ukrainian territory, which I said is roughly comparable to the size of the United Kingdom, British Islands, is really significant. And certainly within that territory, the Russians now engage in their own counter propaganda in order to kind of overcome the very cool, often hostile reception that they have received from the locals. And this driving Nazis out and fighting and defeating the Nazis in Ukraine narrative is certainly something that the Russians have been exploiting a lot.
That's a very interesting way of putting it there about the amount of territory and its equivalents to representing the whole of of Britain. Now, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to On the Record here on RTR FM 92.1. Speaking with me is Curtin University's Associate Professor Alexei Moraveyev, and we're speaking here about the conflict in Ukraine. I asked you there about, you know, a little bit of the context of what was happening within Ukraine, in particular, a lot of images being circulated in certain parts of the internet of, far-right fighters. I wanted to take a step back and look at the conflict in a larger picture. Looking ahead with your insights, how do you see the possibility of peace one way or another coming forward, and do you have a sense of, you know, when that might be?
Look, I mean, we all obviously need to remember that every war ends in ends in peace and ends with some sort of political resolution. You know, no one is targeting the war for the sake of just unleashing hell. You know, war Russian strategist and Clausewitz has become known for through his metaphorical phrasing is the exercise of politics by other means. So clearly, both Russia and Ukraine, as well as the West, we need to remember this is not a conflict between Russia and Ukraine. This is a conflict between Russia and the West, and Ukraine has become a proxy actor here, unfortunately. And this is really dramatic. This is really dramatic and heartbreaking when you actually see a country of some 44 million people being held hostage to the ambitions of great powers and their thirst for power and dominance, and obviously the need to either preserve the status quo, is what the United States is trying to do, or for Russia change the status quo in there in its favor, and then people in the middle are actually paying the ultimate price for it. There is definitely an appetite to seek a resolution, because a war in a globalized world has shock effects on everyone. And I think even here in Perth, we feel these effects, starting with emotions of members of the local communities here who take it incredibly personally, to obviously everyone else who has a heart and a soul and cannot simply stand by looking at the atrocities and the sheer scale of destruction that is taking place overseas, and to the simple, you know, cynical, nitty-gritty attitude every time we fill up at the Bowser, because obviously the hike in petrol prices is a direct representation and a direct consequences of the war conduct that is currently is taking place in Europe, and associated with it uncertainty. So no one really wants violence to continue. Everyone is seeking solutions, but the problem is, how are you going to find a resolution that would meet all the expectations of war parties involved? So for Russia, it's about achieving victory, political, strategic, geopolitical, military, ideological. I mean, we talked about element of the Russian propaganda called the so-called denazification of Ukraine. For Ukraine, it's about obviously retaining sovereignty. It's about ideally defeating Russia's aggression, forcing Russia to withdraw from occupied territories, and obviously thinking of the post-war reconstruction, because we need to remember the more this war wages and drags on, the more Ukraine suffers. And even if Ukraine will come out victorious, it would still be at enormous loss to it, because its infrastructure is getting completely destroyed, its people who are getting killed, and that's obviously the ultimate treasure of any nation, and certainly Ukraine is no exception here. For the United States, it's about ensuring that Russia will not achieve any victory, whether it's military or political, because it's you know, Russia's win is U.S. loss, and after suffering a massive humiliative defeat in Afghanistan, the Biden administration cannot afford to have another massive blunder, this time occurring in Ukraine, because one more actor that or one more potential beneficiary of this current conflict is China. And if there's going to be a dramatic outcome of this conflict between Russia and the United States over Ukraine, the Chinese will benefit it in one way or another. So I think everyone who is very serious about and gradually intimately involved in this great power politics and contemporary geopolitical developments, also thinking about, well, how the Chinese will come out of this conflict, well, how many benefits they will be able to score, because currently they come across as the ultimate winners in this conflict. So having so many fingers in the same pie, and everyone wants the biggest slice of this pie on its own plate, it makes it really difficult. From the military perspective, from the perspective of the war conduct, I can easily see this war dragging on, at least its active phase, for another 2 or 3 months. That would give sufficient time for the Russians to meet their military objectives and achieve maximum dividends on the ground in order to translate them into political dividends and the negotiations table, unless some sort of an agreement will be struck beforehand, or whether Ukraine will somehow manage to turn the dynamic of events and will deliver the Russians a very heavy blow. But in other than that, I cannot possibly see that the war will come to an end sooner than that, nor that the parties would come some sort of an agreement that will make everyone happy.
All right, Alexei, we are very close to the end of our time together. I was hoping just quickly, how concerned are you about this escalating into a nuclear conflict?
Well, there is this element that is certainly present, because, as I have said, this is not just the war between Russia and Ukraine. Yes, it's an invasion carried out by Moscow, a sovereign nation and a neighbor, but it's very much a war between Russia and the United States. In other words, it's the confrontation between the two nuclear superpowers. So far, the United States kept its involvement in the conflict at a very minimalist level. So they provide the Ukrainian military with logistical support, with some intelligence, with advice, with political, economic, and otherwise support, but they're not entering the conflict militarily yet. And Biden keeps indicating that it has no appetite of committing U.S. forces into the conflict. But there is certainly the risk, especially since the war is as the war drags on, that things will not retain in the current status quo. The United States may be compelled to get involved in the conflict, particularly if atrocities will continue, or there's going to be a massive incident, particularly involving, you know, poisonous elements or chemical warfare elements or something else, and that may trigger an escalation to an open nuclear standoff. So as long as the hostilities on the ground continue, as long as the confrontation between Russia and the United States at the political level and the economic level continue, there is always this risk of the war escalating to a nuclear phase.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time this morning. That's been a very interesting set of insights that you've brought to the conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that was our first guest this morning, Curtin University Associate Professor Alexei Muraviev. And you can go and find out a little bit more about his work through the Curtin website.